Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, page 7, continuing with Haridas Thakur on the third offense. When should a guru be rejected? It may happen that through a satsanga, a guru may lose his qualifications. Starting as a big guru, by committing namaparad, he loses his knowledge. By offending other Vaishnavas, he loses the taste for the name and gradually falls under the control of wealth and women. Such a guru should be rejected. By the mercy of Krishna, that disciple will obtain a new bona fide guru and take up pure chanting of the name again. Okay, so if someone's very interested in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna as the Chaitanya Guru, because all gurus are representing him, will then see that you have a bona fide guru. Mm-hmm. Right? Now, in here, from our kind of position, when we say a new bona fide guru, then for us that would mean a Diksha Guru. Yes. Yes, but it doesn't. Because the point is once you're connected, you're connected to what's missing. If the guru is not able to behave properly or understand things properly, what's lost? The siksha. So then one needs to carry on with siksha. You know what I'm saying? When Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about the reinitiation, that we see in the example that he gives as someone who's taken initiation from a caste Goswami or family guru. And so therefore the process of initiation is basically the same. It's the same technique. They're following the same padati. So therefore you're going to go through that ceremony again because technically you weren't actually initiated because the guru's not bona fide. So in that case, then you go through it again because you can only have one Diksha Guru. So that's why it's a very careful point. But because they're not actually a proper guru, then you take reinitiation again. Right? But then if something happens to that guru, that they're a bona fide guru, then you just continue with siksha. Right? Now, some will try to make it like the previous thing, that if anything goes wrong, even though they're bona fide, they're coming in the line, they've heard the name, they've done so much service, so there's a good chance, way more service than anybody who's complaining. Like light years. But whatever, that doesn't matter. They've made a mistake, and so now they're to be, thrown in the rubbish. Okay? So, now then the idea will be, is they were never a bona fide guru, so therefore we can do this. But no, they were in the proper, we're talking about Kaska, they're apasampradaya. Therefore, even though it looked like a regular initiate, it wasn't. But if we come into it and there is, then it works. So like this, the neophyte can go on finding more and more ways to try to prove that no, it has to be Diksha. But that's the neophyte. Because it's siksha that's the important. You've been connected. Yes.
Generally, from the institutional point of view, the anxiety is you can, in one sense, manage a person through his guru. So if there is no Diksha Guru, then he'll not.
Yes, but why would that be such a powerful tool unless everybody's neophyte devotees? And what does that say for the institution? So if we're happy that everyone stays neophytes and doesn't move forward to Madhyamas, and then to manage, see, because the neophytes will tend to be a little bit more materialistic, right? Just by definition, because they're just beginning the process. So that means then then you put more weight on mundane management. But then the point is who is the good manager? You know what I'm saying? Because the good managers, it's already going all right. And the good preachers, it's already going all right. So the whole point is if you put the emphasis on pure devotional service and preach that and train in that, then these neophytes by the potency of the holy name, amazingly by magic, become madhyamas. And then madhyamas aren't difficult to manage. You don't need to be a manager to organize madhyamas. You simply have to have some vision and direction and purity, and that idea that, you know, we're doing this for, you know, Srila Prabhupada, for the acharyas, and then they'll work. And then someone who can manage, they can do the organization. They don't need to be the top. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that at one point we have to kind of accept that, well, maybe the idea of a Sankirtan mission is that people move forward in Krishna consciousness rather than we just become better and better at managing, because no one's moving forward, so it's starting to become a behemoth because it's becoming so many, you know, more mundane considerations that we need all these mundane things to try to hold it together. Why not just try, you know, purity's the force? It never says management's the force. It just doesn't come. It's in none of the sutras. So it just has to be understood as management is very important, but you're managing to create an environment for pure devotion. Therefore, if you're a good manager and it's based on pure devotion, means you're preaching that, the people are taking that up, then how much you can manage? Right? If it's just on the mundane platform, let's say you can manage 100 people, but if you're on the platform of purity and pure devotion, you can manage thousands. You know what I'm saying? So it's so much better. But is it about the management or is it about the pure devotion? So as long as we keep the thing as, no, we have to make it all about neophytes. But we find that the Goswamis in their discussions and that they're discussing it so neophytes can understand, but they never recommend it as a position. It's always the madhyama, because only the madhyama is stable. Only the madhyama is steady. So even if one's a neophyte, one should act on that platform, perform those duties. Then it's stable. Right? It's up to the neophyte. Will he be going out on, you know, preaching every day and following the temple program? Not necessarily. But we do it because that's what's been recommended, and that's the program with the money is for. And so, therefore, there's stability. So it's just a matter of being able to move forward in this, that we cannot pander to the mundane tendencies of the neophyte and make that as a standard, like we saw before. You know, it's like that. Is you're functioning in a family and this and that? Okay, you function with those things that are there. But at the same time, as you yourself keep the transcendental consciousness. But if you become like them, you know, we have to fit in. So now you become like those, like the Hindu mindset? Or you maintain the pure devotion? So it's always, one has to move forward. Otherwise, then the problem is the more and more you have untrained people, then the more and more crazy it can be. And more you focus on training, then the less and less problem there is. Right? I mean, after 40, 50 years, why aren't there madhyamas? Why are we still pandering to the neophyte? But the neophyte doesn't remember, we're talking about the thing. Haridas Thakur then makes the point, is the only purification is faith in Krishna, chanting the holy name and association of devotees. That's it. There isn't anything else that will purify you. I mean, it's just not there. And Manu says the same thing. So he makes the point that all these prayaschittas that are there, chapters and chapters and chapters, that's only because of the mundane consciousness of the people in general. Otherwise, they think nothing's happening, and there's no reaction to your work, and they'll go crazy. They'll just do anything they like because they that's what they want to do. But someone does something wrong, they're punished. Then you go, oh, okay. But why instead of focusing on how to punish, Why not focus on how to preach? And preach means pure devotion, not New Age mumbo jumbo. And even if we're preaching New Age mumbo jumbo, the New Age guys are more liberal than we are. They'll forgive, they'll let it go. You know what I'm saying?
No, it seems that till now the idea of Shiksha Guru is not applied.
No, because understanding, appreciating the two gurus and seeing them as equal, that is a symptom of a Madhyamadikari. And when you only see the Diksha, that's a symptom of the neophyte. It says you see Krishna and you have a little bit of something for, you know, the guru, but for other Vaishnavas you just don't care. Madhyamas see Vaishnavas. So that's just the position.
It is also said that we are supposed to find a Diksha amongst our Shiksha Guru.
Yes, you find the Diksha amongst the Siksha. So if something goes wrong with this Diksha Guru, you still have all those Siksha Gurus.
Yes. You are Siksha.
Yes, but the neophyte is, as soon as I pick the Diksha Guru, then all the other Siksha Gurus are thrown to the side, and then if something happens to the Diksha Guru, now I'm left with nobody. And so then you come with philosophy, well, it's just Prabhupada, and we only need Prabhupada, and we don't need gurus. We don't. So these are just more and more neophyte stuff. Because the whole point is about Vaishnavas. That was the first point. Based on that, then we establish Krishna. Now we're establishing the guru. Right? Next will come the Shastra, next will come the holy name. So all these points of you having faith, having firm faith in the guru, one can by the strength of the pure name attain the goal of prema. So that's the whole point. So it's about that firm faith that this is what works. This is the things. You know? So if we put the focus on the primary, then we will see in a different way.
Yes. Right?
Like that. Yes.
In the aspect of Guru Tattva, once there was somebody was asking a question and Jenny was to reply that Guru Tattva is even more difficult to understand than Shambhu Tattva. Because Shambhu Tattva is just, you are like distinguishing that is neither Jiva nor Vishnu.
Right.
But Guru Tattva is, he's taking you from, like, initially he represents the best of the Vaishnavas so that you can see him like that. And he's representing that aspect of Advaita Acharya, that he's a lot of, like, taking you beyond the ego, then Nityananda Prabhu, then he's taking you to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes. Yes, yes. So the point is, it's as it says here, by the mercy of Krishna, that disciple will attain a new bona fide guru. So that by the grace of Krishna, one gets guru. By the grace of guru, one gets Krishna. Something happens to the guru, it happens, but you still move on. Because it's Krishna who is the guru. They're representing Krishna. That means Krishna remains.
Yes.
Prabhupada, the Adi Guru, like it said before here, is that he remains.
Yes.
And so you just have to find who is speaking so that you can have that faith in what the Adi Guru says and follow it. That's what you're looking for. Then it'll move forward. And if that's appreciated, there is no problem. And if that's not appreciated, you'll always have a problem. So the emphasis on Prabhupada, but Prabhupada is what? Siksha Guru or Diksha Guru? Right? So when it's Diksha, and okay, no one's seat can be higher, you know, that when you sit on your asan for giving class, you know, your head shouldn't be any higher than Prabhupada's, you know, heart. So therefore, you know, and this is how we're respecting Prabhupada. Why not respect his instructions? Right? You know, if it's all just physical, mathematical, and all this, then.
If you have a tool, you don't mind.
Huh?
If a guru is very tall.
Yeah, then you have to have, you know, like in those office chairs, they have that little lever that you can make it go up and down. So then someone comes in and is readjusting the Vyasa songs. And what are you doing? He says, oh, he's so tall. So he has to go down 3 inches, you know. Yeah, so that's the whole thing, is that when we make it all about secondary, then all we get is, all we can function is within secondary. And it has to be within the primary. Means the etiquettes are there, the traditions are there, that is said. So, but That means that you appreciate Prabhupada's position. You appreciate Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya. Right? He's not just the name on a book. Like I pointed out once, one of the printings, they put Founder Acharya in small letters. You know, because of the Western grammar and all that, you know, everybody goes into small letters if possible. Like that. They don't like keeping things as big letters. You see, Prabhupada, anything that's doing with Krishna, even his qualities, he'll put them in big letters. But, you know, whatever. So we adjust. But, and then I pointed that out to the who oversees that, all that. And they looked at it and says, no, that's wrong. You know, so he was trying to check what happened. But, you know, it goes by, no one notices. So that's the whole thing, is that this whole, any issues on guru, tattva, you start with, as Haridas Thakur said, with the Adi Guru, with the founder Acharya. And when that's in place, then everybody's following those instructions. But if you don't start there, then you'll never work it out. Not as the big institution. You know, local village guru, maybe, but, you know, if you're doing something big, like what Prabhupada and the Acharyas wanted. Because Rupa Goswami established this preaching mission, and then it's formalized by Jiva Goswami. And then that just comes down to Parampara. Is that? Yeah. Okay. If a guru makes unsuitable people for disciples, he will have to suffer for that. And if a disciple takes an unqualified guru, he will accordingly suffer. Right? So both have to be very careful. In order to avoid these misfortunes, one should be cautious. Not doubtful, cautious is the difference. On the other hand, as long as both guru and disciple are properly qualified, the relationship will continue. Ideally, this relationship is eternal. But if the disciple becomes bad, the guru must reject him. And if the guru becomes bad, the disciple must reject him. Otherwise, both fail. Better one than both. Right? So it's not a sentimental thing. It means you have a relationship that's there. It is personal, so one's comfortable, one's very happy in that kind of position. So if something goes wrong, then it's always a disappointment. But the point is it's about Krishna, because we're dealing with conditioning. And the conditioning's not real. So it's not an important element. Means if you're looking at the overall, means you're considering it, of course, but it's not about the secondary, it's about the primary, that we're servants of Krishna. So therefore, then, to serve Krishna, we learn about Krishna through someone, right? That's what the Katha Upanishad says. You have to learn from someone. So therefore, we're hearing and that. So the Acharyas so nicely have written so much detail. And then from that we get that through our Acharya, and then we're able to apply it.
Now, actually, also in the case when the guru fall down, even what he has given to the disciple before.
Yeah, they tend to reject all that.
Usually a lot of inspiration. No?
Yes. And so people throw that all out. But the point is it's like, it's just like, let's say you're going to Calcutta, right? You know the goal, you know where you're going. You get on the bus gets you up to Krishnagar and then breaks down. You know, now it's not like, oh no, we're not in Krishnagar, this is all bogus and all that, we have to start back in Mayapur again, you know, and all that. No, you just get on another bus and keep going. Now, one bus going all the way there, that's much easier. But if you have to take 10 buses, you take 10. You get there, because you know where you're going. You know, oh, I'm so disappointed, I'm so cheated, I'm so this, I'm so that, because it's all about me, because I'm the center of the universe. Yes, of course you're disappointed, but we have to also understand that this self-centered dissatisfaction and emotional experience is a slight bit overrated. You know, it goes down really well when you know, if you're somewhere between the Atlantic and the Pacific. But generally, if you're on, you know, how you say, if the Atlantic is on the east and the Pacific's on the west. But if you're from the landmass where the Atlantic's on the west and the Pacific's on the east, somehow or another, it's not as important. You know, there's more of a sense of you're part of something bigger. You're part of a family, part of a community, part of something, rather than you're the center of the universe. So then, we have to understand is that this is not a standard. Yes, it's a disappointment, but it should be a personal disappointment. But the truth of this truth is, what's the difference between matter and spirit? Spirit means it's about Krishna. Right? And the process. The process is bona fide. It works. Something goes wrong in anybody in the whole process. That just means that's the problem. You continue where it works. It's like water. You know, water's coming down the hill. There's a rock there. It doesn't stop there and go, you know, but I'm going there. This is my path. You know, you have to move out of the way. What is this? You know, are you trying to impede me? Do you not like me? You know, just go around. That's all. Just go around. So we have to understand is that it's not a nice thing. There's all the emotional this, that. Yes, but at some point we have to get over that. You know what I'm saying? You know, 20 years, 30 years later, we're still not over it. Right? But someone gets over a marriage in how long? Right? Traditionally, the old school, it was 1 year, then they felt bad and this and that. And, you know, if someone died, they wore black and all that. You know, doesn't seem to be the process these days. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, it's a problem that we use it as a method and why we don't have to follow authority. Why we don't have to accept the system. Why we can be independent and do our own thing. Because we've been cheated, we've been lied to, we've been this, we've been... But lied means what? The person was trying to make you Krishna conscious. Maybe they didn't become Krishna conscious, but they were trying. You know, it's like what you said. Why not take the good things? There's so many good things were there. You were inspired in Krishna consciousness. Move forward. You can take gold from a dirty place. Ever heard that one? Right? And that's coming from a materialist. A smart materialist. Right? You know, Chanakya was smart. And we accept what he says. But the point is move forward, take that. If we're looking at the positive, that's the thing. We're talking about positive and courage. You can't be strong with people and all that. But at the same time, we're so strong with anybody that doesn't fit into our, you know, little box. So the whole point, why not take what's useful? Move forward. If our philosophy is be encouraged, then why not be encouraged? So is it about being encouraged or is it about ourselves? And we don't mean self, meaning self-realization.
Training, education from the beginning.
If you do this from the beginning, there's zero problem.
Yes.
But you have to do this from the beginning. Even if not, you talk like this, and you have a group of people, 2-3 days, it'll be knocked down, drag out, yelling and screaming, this, that, pulling out hairs, you know, gnashing of teeth. How you say, steam whistling out of the navel and all that kind of stuff. And then after that, they run out of things to say because they only have the same things to say. You know, I was cheated, I was this, you know, I was so disappointed. Okay, and what else? Well, I was cheated, I was, you know, felt this and I'm so disappointed. Okay, and what else? Well, I was cheated, I was, you know, like that. That's all they can say. After 3 days, they get tired of it. So then they start to go, oh, okay, okay. So that's the whole point is, but, you know, you just have to do this. So, if someone from the beginning knows this, it works really well. And if later, then yes, it's harder to bend an old bamboo. Like that. But, you know. So that's the point, is we have to, but it says here, by the mercy of Krishna. Not by, I go back to mental speculation, I don't accept the Shastra, I don't accept the Guru. Oh, because of this, you know, I had this bad experience, so everybody involved is bad and this and that. And oh, you had no bad experiences in the material world and you're happy to go back there for shelter? Right? Why is it that if something goes wrong in the spiritual life, we're so happy to go back to the material world, which we were running away from, you know, to get to Krishna consciousness? Why not just move on in Krishna consciousness? So like that, then we have to see if we're actually talking personal, then that's what you have to do. Someone's there, it's a loss, you move forward. But even on the material platform, you see, let's say, you know, it's not an uncommon thing, let's say the kids weren't so old, but they were old enough that they were there and had time and spent and all that, and let's say they're, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14, like this, and then their mother dies, or the father dies. And then later on in their 20s, you ask them, they're angry at their parents that they left them. It's kind of like they died. You can't really do much about that. But they're still angry. They left me. So these are just these mundane sentimental feelings. So that there's personal feelings, this, that, that's good. But we have to understand is that attachment conditioning, our conditioning, benefits we'll get from that underlying these things is not a strong enough platform to make dynamic advancement of Krishna consciousness. It has to be based on that we understand we're servant of Krishna and the material world is not a nice place. It never was and never will be. And so we just have to move forward. That's what Prabhupada would use the battlefield analogies. Though in the 90s it's politically incorrect, so it's thrown out. But it's exactly what you're doing.
Okay. So generally we observe that when hardships are went through, those who are sincere and they wanted to practice and they came along this bad situation and explained properly, they would move on.
Yes.
But those who hook on to the concept that Krishna consciousness means everything should go well, like liberation, basically.
Liberation or... you know, how you say heavenly planets.
Heavenly planets.
Right.
And then they use this as an excuse...
to try another process.
Try another process. Because if they go out by themselves, they are considered as losers.
That's also... it's also a way to go out. What can I do? You know, Guru's boat, and then they leave. Yeah. Yeah, you see that a lot also. It's a false ego that they have to find someone else at fault, and then that's why they did it, when it's actually their own attachment. You know, it means it's just like, let's say here, you have Guru left, zone went on perfectly fine. Because this discussion we're having now, that's what was explained to them. They went on like that. Australia the same, because they used to come to Mayapur. Like that. You know, there's other zones, Guru left, in 3 weeks, there was nobody left in the zone. I mean, you know, that big Jagannath Baladev Subhadra in Berlin, they were still there, but everybody else was gone. Because it was an excuse. Oh, he's out enjoying, so therefore, you know, what can I do? If he's out enjoying, then how can I stop myself? You know, you're looking for an excuse. Right? Who cares? You know, saying, the dog's chewing on a shoe. You know, what can I do? I just had to chew on the shoe. You know, it's kind of like, who chews on shoes? You know, does that make sense? So it's just a matter of what's presented. Because if you also all these things and support and oh yes and let the rage out and do all that kind of stuff, then yeah, then they take up the mundane and go and leave. But if you present, the point is it's about Prabhupada, not as the Diksha Guru, but Prabhupada as the founder of Charya. His teachings are perfect. You follow them, you will go back to Godhead. And whatever service you've done, that remains. And even the guru, whatever he did before becoming, you know, non-viable, that also will remain. It's not going to go away. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, do you want to go back to Godhead or not? If you do, then, like it says here, by the mercy of Krishna, a disciple attain a new bona fide guru and take up pure chanting of the name again. So it'll happen. If you take up the pure chanting, then you'll attain the goal of prema. You know, in the previous section. So that's the thing. If we want to go, then you just keep going. So if you have that faith, it'll remain. So the difficult, that's why one is trying to bring the neophytes to the Madhyama platform as quick as possible. Because the Kanista platform is dangerous. Right? The Madhyama platform is more set. It's solid. Like that. And from that, very nicely, you can get to the platform of Bhava. Right? The sadhana is steady, so from that steady sadhana, then there is taste, then there's attachment, then there's Bhava. So that's the whole point. If we put the emphasis on that, then all these other things fall away. They're not important. It's just, what are you supposed to do now? You can sit there and know this and know that. Well, what are you supposed to do now? You know, we say, oh, but it shouldn't have been like this, it shouldn't have been, but it is like that. Deal with it. Move forward. Right? Dealing the present. That's the mode of goodness. Oh, but it should have been like this, and you know, if we do it, then maybe it'll be like that. These are the passion and ignorance. Deal in the present, right now. What can you do? Who do you know? You know, of course, there's going to be emotional disturbance and distraction, but you take shelter of those devotees that you have respect for in Krishna consciousness, and then move forward. Okay? And then become stable, and then it works nicely.
It's interesting that in the world, anybody who went through a situation successfully came out, they are respected. Like,
yes.
Those who go from rags to riches.
Yes, yes.
But the liberals and all, they all ponder upon when there is a problem, it's like, the problem is like...
It's the end of the world. Yeah, and nobody respects. Yeah. Not even themselves. You know, not that we're picking out, you know, have to pick out this point, because the thing is, Vaishnavas are known as liberal. So we don't have a problem with that idea, the concept that they accept everybody. It's just we're pointing out that they don't accept everybody. So it's not actually as liberal as they would, you know, hope to be. So it's only when you're broad-minded, then you have that liberality. Because otherwise it's just you're taking your narrow-mindedness and shifting it more to the left, that's all. You know, but so broad-minded means you can appreciate the conservative, appreciate the where they're right, they're right, and where they're wrong, they're wrong. So in these cases, we're pointing out what's wrong. So the point is why it's wrong is because it doesn't help Krishna consciousness. That's the way you're standing. We're not worried about the social, the economic, and these things. We perform the duties, you know, of what is standard to do, and it moves forward. You know. That's the, you know, so even though we're liberal, we'll be considered conservative by the narrow-minded liberalists. Yes. The guru takes. Okay, we did that. Yes. So the point is you don't. It means the guru is that you just move because it's the siksha. So you don't keep following the siksha if it's not good. But as Prabhu mentioned. Even you take shelter of someone else and are hearing new siksha, it doesn't mean the siksha that was of value in the past from the guru, you know, what that he gave that was inspiring, you don't keep using. You still use that. I mean, if we can, for in the philosophy, if we can defeat these other bogus, you know, points using, you know, how you say, commentaries on Shankaracharya's, you know, work on Vedanta Sutra, then the point is because they're right, but only that part. Anything else we're not touching. So if they were right, they inspired us to chant. Aren't we supposed to chant? Yes. So therefore, it's good. If they said something that resonated, that makes us chant, that's still good. Not that, oh, they're gone, now it's all gone. You know, I mean, what do you call it? George Washington died. Does that mean now democracy is out the window? You know what I'm saying? So somebody says, you know, somebody says, you know. So that's the whole thing is that when something goes, then immediately we throw everything out with it. That's what Prabhupada says. Don't, you know, about the don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, it's like the eye has a cataract. Yes. Then you remove the cataract. You don't remove the eye. That's why it says, Oma Jnana Timidandasya Jnana Jana Shalakaya. The Shalaka is a special instrument for removing cataracts. So it's there in the Ayurveda. And so the Guru is removing that, and therefore we'll be able to see. Right? So then that's the principle is that's what's removed, not remove the eye. So we'll take, oh no, the gurus, and then reduce the meaning of gurus, and no one should be able to see your guru and everybody else because they'll feel so bad seeing that some Vaishnava is being respected and all that. And somehow or another, that's considered an okay platform. According to Haridas Thakur and Rupa Goswami, people like that, you should avoid their company like the plague. And I mean like bubonic plague, that, or Ebola, that kind of plague. You know, it's just you don't associate with them. You don't take them seriously. You deal with them properly according to etiquette, but you do not take their platform, their position as anything of any value for Vaishnavas. This whole thing is that the solution, the guru's falling down, is you reduce the position and respect of the guru, so therefore it's no big deal. No, you raise it of Prabhupada's position, and what is the position of the Vaishnava, and what they're trying to do, and so if anything goes wrong, then Prabhupada's there, and, you know, being Vaishnava's glory. If the neophyte devotee is considered glorious and worth, you know, respect, then why wouldn't somebody who's trying harder and preaching? So that's the thing. Instead of reducing it for devotees, we should be increasing it. You know, as like Prabhu pointed out, you know, we don't respect Siksha Gurus. Why? Because, you know, where's the sense of possession? See, there's this idea of spiritual means we have the sense of possession. That's not actually the necessary element. It's that we are inspired by the instruction, by the direction. Does that make sense? So that comes up a lot of problems. People think that if you have a strong relationship, there must be that sense of possession. And then if someone doesn't respond to that sense of possession, then there's something wrong in the relationship. Like that. And so it's a common mistake. Because with the Diksha Guru, you can feel that possession. And whatever you wanted your father to do that he never did, then you expect the Diksha Guru will do. Like that. But Siksha Gurus, generally, they avoid that. But the point is this, the principle is, it's not about possession. It's about identifying with Krishna, identifying with the body of devotees. But it's the souls who are the devotees, not the conditioner. Does that make sense? So when the principle is understood, then you can start to apply it with, you know, the particular individual, personal, you know, mood and flavor of whoever is suffering under that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And try to give that support and all those kind of things. But you have to steer them in the direction that, what is the proper understanding? Because you're taking shelter problem, not because he's the ultimate Diksha Guru, it's because he's the founder of Acharya. Anybody in ISKCON, they are disciples of the founder Acharya. But to have that proper connection, then is through your Diksha Guru. You know, like that, and the Siksha Guru. So just like everybody, Krishna is the actual original Guru. Everybody represents him. But that connection to him and everybody serves Krishna is through the Guru. So it's the same kind of principle. It's just that with the founder Acharya, all the instructions and that's already nicely worked out. You just have to follow that. Right? So now it's a matter of the inspiration, the individual, and all that. Does that make sense? Yeah? Good? Okay. In order to prevent the pain of having to reject one's guru, one should first carefully examine him to see if he is a pure devotee of Krishna. Even in receiving a maternal uncle, a material article, one examines it for quality. Maternal uncle, yeah. How did I get uncle out of that? Oh, because of the CLE. Okay. Oh, and there's a U above that. Okay, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. Okay. Once having accepted a qualified guru, if one disobeys his instruction, one commits a grave offense. By that, even the demigods can fall down to hell. Right? So one examines what is the quality, and then takes initiation. And even if, in order to have the pain, one sees that they're advanced, and then you take shelter there. Even if there's something going wrong, you're still going to examine, is that something that just happened, or is this now a position? Like Prabhupada, he would ask these senior men who had done some mistakes, so, do you want to function in this new capacity, or was that just an aberration to your regular, activities? And then accordingly, then Prabhupada would situate them in service so that they can move forward. Does that make sense? So you're seeing, is it just standard? Like the person's been a pujari, been stable and steady for so long, and then this new bhaktin is there, you know, washing the deity plates and all that, something happens. So now what? Does that mean now he can't do puja? He never was a pujari. He wasn't even a devotee. In fact, I don't even know if he was even on this planet. He was actually just, you know, projecting himself here from the lower planets. You know, it's just whatever theories we might have. So the point is now if he continues in that position, what's going to be the, you know, you just have to figure that out. Does that make sense? So when there's that stability, they're working and functioning properly, then you see what's there. Like Brahma, he has that problem. Then the four Kumaras go and they discuss it with him. Try to adjust the mentality. Then adjusting the mentality, he goes back to being Brahma. Right? Because technically, you know, by our modern standards of political correctness, Brahma would not be able to be part of our Sampradaya anymore. You know, and probably wouldn't half of the people that are mentioned in Bhagavatam either.
Maybe he cannot even be in the universe.
Yeah, he has to go to another universe. That would be the best. Yes, you know. But at the same time, as someone like that king who became the queen, then they might be elevated in stature. Like, you know, yes. Okay. So we're good on Guru?
Yeah.
Okay. Four, criticism of Scripture. Scripture means the four Vedas, the Upanishads and the Puranas. Having emanated from the breathing of Krishna, they constitute perfect knowledge and authority. Particularly in spiritual matters, these must be referred to as the final proof. Because the material senses of man, characterized by the four faults of karana-patava, limited perception, brahma, illusion, vipralipsha, desire to report something other than what is perceived, and pramada, inattention of the senses. Okay. Is that first one also, is that also known as... Which one is the one that's also known as... Oh, Brahma, here it is. Okay, from illusion, okay.
The first one is imperfect senses.
Yes. Yeah, then illusion, then cheating propensity.
Tendency.
And the pramada, inattention of the senses. Imperfect senses, yeah, okay. Cannot possibly... Okay. Because the material senses of the man characterized by the four faults... cannot possibly perceive anything beyond the material level of unconscious matter. The spiritual realm would be unapproachable without the aid of Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is given the four Vedas, which are beyond the four faults of the senses. And by these alone can man progress towards the spiritual goal. Right? So only with knowledge of the Veda can we actually understand. That has to be the final proof. Right? Now we have that proof and then we're applying it. And trying to apply it, then things start to work. Then we can use the Anuman and Pratyaksha. But if it's not working, we still go back to Veda as the proof. Yes? And then again, try. What are the contents of the scriptures? The wise man will understand that karma and jnana are secondary and worthless as independent processes. Right? So without bhakti, they're useless. And if you use them in bhakti, then they're useful. And that the path of bhakti is the essence, right? That's the primary. And karma and jnana are used as the secondary. The Vedas stand as the authoritative guide and reference, pramana. And they prove nine different topics, which may be classified into sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. Right? So these are the classifications. And within that you'll have details. By these 10 principles, the Vedic authority, and 9 topics which the Vedas prove. Okay, by these 10 principles, so, means the Vedic authority and the 9 topics which the Vedas prove. Ignorance is destroyed and transcendental knowledge is revealed.
The 9 topics are Dasamul,
Nainas? It means all 10 are Dasamul. But in that you have Praman, Vedic authority, and Prameya, the 9 topics. So, in the Dasamul, there's 9 topics that you're discussing, but you have to establish where those 9 topics come from, because they don't come from Pratyaksha or Anuma, they come from Shabda. Right? That's the Shabda Vishesha. There's that one also. There's Vishesha, Mulakvat. Okay. Or Shastra Yonit Tvat. Yeah. Okay, these nine principles may be summarized as follows. One, there is one Supreme Lord, Vishnu. Two, the Lord is possessor of all energies. Three, Krishna is the fountainhead of all rasas and is situated in his dham where he eternally gives joy to the jivas. Right? So he mentioned he always has the position. His energies, his activities, and then, you know, his will. Right? So in his will, then he is situated in dham where he gives eternal joy to the jivas, his interaction with the devotees. Right? Then he possesses all energies and he's one Supreme Lord, Vishnu. Then the next in that, so that's Krishna, right? Then the next in Sambandha, the jivas are particles of the Lord, unlimited in number, infinitesimal in size, but conscious, right? So that kind of sums up the living entity, right? Particles of the Lord, unlimited in number, infinitesimal in size, but conscious. Even though you're so small, you're still conscious. So that's the generic, the nature of the jiva. Now, how they're applying that nature, then some jivas are eternally bound in the material universes, being attracted by illusory pleasure. And six, some jivas are eternally liberated and engaged in worshipping Krishna. They reside with him as associates in the spiritual sky and experience prema. So, the position of jiva in four, then you have two things you can do with that. Either go towards Krishna, and be established in prema, or come to the material world and be conditioned. Right? Like that. Yes. Seven. Krishna exists. Now, how to hold all that together? Krishna exists with his energies, the material energy, jiva energy, and spiritual energy, in a state of simultaneous identity and differentiation, permeating all, yet remaining aloof, which is only possible by his inconceivable power, achintya veda veda tattva. Right? So that's our philosophy. Then these other things are things that we're defining by that. Right? Means the Sambandhya Gyan is held together by this. Because we've established the jiva, the Lord, and his energies. And then, how is all that held together? That's this. So this is our philosophy. That's where the different Vaishnava schools, how they'll hold all this together will be different. It's all part of this, but they're taking a different aspect. And so they might emphasize one area or another just because that plays more prominence. Right? Eight. The process specifically mentioned, Abhideya, for the Jiva and the Vedas, is the ninefold process of devotional service, divided into Vaidhi and Rag Bhakti. Of the nine processes, the hearing and chanting of the holy name are principal means. That is the reason the chanting of Om is glorified in the Vedas. Because Om, by that, then you can chant, because it's the Lord, the living entities, and the internal potency. And with that, then all mantras are given. So the chanting of the Lord's holy name is there. So in the form of Om, everybody will chant it. It says if you had to start every Vedic mantra with Krishna, then some people would like it, some wouldn't. But if you chant with Om, everybody's cool. Right? So that's the whole point. You're having to chant the Lord's name. So the devotional process is the main of that hearing and chanting. And then all the whole Vedic process, the chanting is this prominent aspect. Nine, the final goal or constitutional platform, prayojana, of the jivas is the activity of pure bhakti, prema. This is attained by the mercy of Krishna. And so, if understanding these first seven, you apply that very nicely in the process in eight, you know, and with the purpose of pleasing Krishna, then by Krishna's mercy, then you attain nine, the prayojana. So that's why you always notice that it's been mentioned that they always are preaching Sambandha Gyan.
Yes.
Right? The Sambandha Gyan doesn't mean that you don't mention the process and the goal. But it's about the importance of that process and how it fits into the whole, you know, Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. What is the position of Abhideya? Why it's important? Mm-hmm. You know, Prayojana, why that's there, why that goal? Yes. You understand? That's all Sambandha Gyan. Does that make sense? Because we see is when you get into Abhideya, then you're talking just the practice of it. You've already accepted that knowledge, so the practice of it. So if doubts that come up in that practice, they generally go back to Sambandha Gyan. And so by then correctly understanding that, then the Abhideya goes nicely. And the Prayojana means it's a taste. So we can say is, you know, but we don't put so much emphasis on that. But there's so much emphasis, we just don't know it. Like the Krishna book. That's all just pure taste. But we may not get that taste, so we don't see it. So that's just the point. You know, it's like the person with jaundice, you give them sugar, it tastes bitter. You know, but the sugar isn't any different. Somebody else tastes it, and it tastes sweet. It's fine. So then it's just a matter of that position by Krishna's grace. Then one is able to appreciate that position. Right? Yes? No?
Yes, there is a lot of emphasis on the Sambandhyana.
Yes.
It means this is the main, we can say, activity or service of the Guru, to teach Sambandhyana.
Yes. But as they go, also the Abhidaya and Prayojana. But the point is without the Sambandhyana, then what are you going to base the Abhidaya and Prayojana on? Because the Sambandhyana knows what your goal is.
Yes.
But then you have to actually use that knowledge and apply it. That's Abhidaya. When you apply it, that's Abhidaya. When you get the results, that's Prayojana. Mm-hmm. But in Sambandhyana, you already know about it.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Mm-hmm. But within that, generally our if devotees have issues, it's generally not that you're supposed to perform activities, the nine processes, to please Krishna, and the ultimate goal is prema. Yeah, it's always before. It's always in Sambandhyana. Issues are in Sambandhyana. And if there is an issue with Abhidaya and Prayojana, it's the concept of it, not the actual thing. So they're still functioning in Sambandhyana. Then. These are the basic principles for the guidance of the jivas, which are denoted by the Vedas. If one criticizes the Vedas, that is an offense to the holy name. Such a person is a low rascal. Right? Because the Vedas are explaining this, you don't appreciate the Vedas, then it's an offense to the holy name. Right? Because the Shastra is explaining the holy name. In the history of India, there are six personalities who invented theories, and by their inventions, they simply brought themselves to no good end. Jaimini, though claiming to follow the Vedas, does not recognize the Supreme Lord and recommends karmakanda activity, independent of worship of God. By concoction, Kapila thinks that the Lord is imperfect and recommends the process of yoga without understanding its goal. Taking shelter of the philosophy that everything is illusion, the Jainists preach against the Vedas. The atheist Charvak had no respect for the Vedic knowledge. And similarly, the Buddhist Gotama does not worship the Lord, but instead thinks in terms of human beings. All these philosophies are against the Vedas, sometimes directly and sometimes in a hidden way, right? So he showed that Jaimini is accepting he practices the Veda, but only the Karmakanda, and he rejects the aspect of Krishna as a person. You know, the independent worship. That you worship God, yes, is only because it's part of karma. Right? Because like we saw, if you worship the demigods, you have to worship Vishnu. Right? So therefore, for the Karmakandis, they're worshiping Vishnu, but only because it's part of the worship of the demigods.
Yes.
Like that, so they don't see the worship of God as independent. For the devotees, that's the whole point. They worship Krishna independently. It's not dependent upon all these other aspects. That's the difference. So that's why we have to appreciate that devotional service is independent. Right, and then all these others, how then they start to get off track, and then those who are completely opposed to the Veda, and like that. All these philosophies are against the Vedas, sometimes directly, and sometimes in a hidden way. Therefore, the wise man, knowing that belief in these philosophies makes one an offender, completely avoids them. One other philosophy to be avoided is that of the Mayavadis. The scriptures are not genuine, but are distortions of the meanings of the Veda. Actually, they are covered Buddhism and are meant to mislead the foolish people in the Kali Yuga. On the order of the Lord, Shiva appeared in a Brahmana family and became an Acharya. Then, like Jaimini, while taking authority from the Vedas, twisted the meaning to delude the world. He took the Buddhist doctrine of illusion and tried to delude the world. By doing this, he covered the direct meaning of the Vedas and the process of bhakti. Thus, if one accepts any of these philosophies, there is no place for real bhakti. One takes the holy name along with these philosophies, one is committing serious offense to the name. One simply brings about one's own end. Right? So someone's absorbed in these philosophies, then they come in contact, then they start chanting, then it's not a problem because now this is a new thing, they get inspired. But now if they just try to incorporate that into their position, then that will be offensive, they won't move forward nicely. That make sense? Like that. It's not going to destroy their devotion, like the first offense, as long as they respect devotees and deal properly. But it's going to slow them down because they're putting it in the category where it's dependent upon other things. The jiva can accept the direct meaning of the Vedas, which is the path of pure bhakti. He will be rewarded with the sweetness of prema. But if he takes indirect meaning or metaphorical interpretations as the real meaning, he cannot come to truth and dies of his offense to Krishna. The principal sound in the Vedas is Om, which is the name of Krishna. And by chanting the name, one can achieve the goal of life. Right? So chanting the name, so Lord Chaitanya gives the recommendation, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Right? Om is used where it's appropriate in chanting mantras, but as a japa, we don't do Om japa. Right? Well, it depends on how you do. So if you go Om, is that just one mantra? I mean, how do you define, you know, like that? Otherwise, you have to go Om, 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 Om. There is one mantra that goes Om, Om, Om. I don't remember what it is, but it's one where it has. I can't remember what the mantra is. If by misfortune or accident happens that one commits shruti ninda, one should be repentant and offer his respects to the scriptures. With attention, one should offer flowers and tulsi leaves to the Bhagavatam and the Vedas. Being the essence of the Vedas and an incarnation of Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam will give unlimited mercy. So then take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Maharaj, I have seen that in the past, you can offer Artik to the Bhagavatam.
Yeah, you can.
It's like
deity. Can? I mean, some temples they keep Bhagavatam on the altar.
Yes.
So when Artik goes on, then it's one of the, you know, when you're coming down, Krishna, then Tulsi, Bhagavatam. Yes.
In Bhagavatam we hear that Narada is condemning that he is in love with the pure bhakti.
Yes.
And we get this almost come from
that. Yeah. But it's not that it's not there, it's just that people won't notice it. Right, because you see is that in this the acharyas are quoting from all the various scriptures. And so it's all explaining that, but because if there's 100 verses of a story, and 2 or 3 are explaining pure devotion, people are going to notice the story, not the pure devotion. So that's the thing, is people will see what they can do, they won't notice what they shouldn't do, they won't see what they, you know, what is actually the proper thing to do. They'll just, you know, go along with whatever they like. So, therefore, the Bhagavatam, then that points out everything exactly. So every verse is about Krishna. Every syllable is about Krishna. So that's uniqueness there, is that it's only discussing things from the angle of pure devotion to Krishna. Then from there it discusses all the other shastras and the positions and how devotees apply themselves in the material world and their situations in the service to Krishna.
My point is not as what you are saying. Everything is there. You know?
See, this is the gentleman's way of saying two. Means but.
No, it's not. It's not. My point is that that's there, knowing all these things, still he emphasizes this Yomini and all these things. I think
no, he didn't emphasize those. Those are his followers emphasized those. He compiled the Vedas. And then his disciples, then they came up with these philosophies. Right? So then, because they're based on the Veda, they'll quote from Vyasadeva, but they'll come up with their own interpretation. So that's Narad Muni's point. Is with Bhagavatam, then you see that none of these schools approach Bhagavatam. They don't use it to establish their own philosophy. So then that gives the other ones are showing how in your conditioned state you can take that connected to Krishna. Right? But then the Bhagavatam is showing that being Krishna conscious, then how you would function, you know, within the material environment. It takes the Sarva Dharmam Paritya Jamam Ekam Sharanam. That aspect then looks at everything. So it's just giving that higher, that final conclusion. That's why then, you know, it's said that Vyasadeva wrote this in his maturity. So he's already written everything, compiled everything perfectly. But the point is then there's more perfect, most perfect. Right? So the Bhagavatam, that's the most perfect. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because that's the point, the example you're giving, that's the very reason Narad Muni is making the point.
When you see that something is going wrong, you say, okay, just cancel it.
Just?
You say, no, just cancel this program. No,
it depends, but you don't get rid of those things that are of use. Let us say you're setting up the program and you put mics and speakers and that and put down gutties and all this and that, then something's not going right, you can't arrange it and there's some trouble, so we cancel the program. Now do you walk off and leave all that stuff there and don't care what happens to it? Or do you take all that with you for when you can make a proper program?
After coming to Harvardham, you Germany
came
later on, right?
The point is for those who want pure bhakti, then Bhagavatam is that light. If people want to be distracted by something else, then these other sages have written things to keep everybody busy. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. But if you want to go back to Godhead, you want to develop prema, then you follow Bhagavatam. And if you want to stay in the material world, then there's plenty of other options. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, you want a shaved head and that, you know, then you're the Buddhist, you want a shaved head but no clothes, then you have the Jains. You know, you have so many options. Just depends upon how you want to stay.
8.4 million options.
Yes, so many options. Yes.
Also, it is not that they originated it. These philosophies were there and they propagated.
That's true. That's also that. They've always been there, these philosophies. They're just the ones that then write them. You know, like Krishna said, is when he makes a creation, then the Vedas already contain all these things and all these discussions. And so then the different souls, they'll take the position of those sages, and then they'll speak according to how Krishna empowers them, and what they speak will be what's in the Veda. So these philosophies have always been there. It's not that they've just come up now. Just like I'm not sure when the pastime was, but there's a pastime where the demons, they were asking Sukracharya, why is it the demigods are always successful and we always fail? Right? And he pointed out, because they study Shastra, they do sacrifices, they do austerity. Right? And so then they thought, well, if we do that, will we be successful? And Sukracharya says, yes. So they start doing that, and they become very powerful because they're so focused, and the demigods are, you know, they do their job, plus there's a little enjoyment on the side. You know, so the demons were just focused on this, so they became more powerful. So the demigods didn't know what to do. They went to Brahma. Brahma didn't know what to do. They all went to Vishnu. So when they arrived, and Vishnu said, I know why you're all here. So now before, you know, want a solution to your problem. So before that, if anybody would like to just, you know, don't bother with the, you know, what's going, you know, the problem, just come back to me. Then, you know, whoever wants to come, come forward. And they're all, well, you know, I got this and that. Well, you know, something like that. And, you know, so many different things. You know, I got to take the daughter to the dentist and, you know, all these different things like that. You know, they forgot to put the, you know, the, how you say, to feed the dog. You know, all these different reasons. So, and Krishna, okay. And then from behind him comes Adi Jinnah and Adi Buddha. Jinnah is the Jain. And Buddha is like that. So that means there's an original of these. And just every Kali Yuga, they become prominent. Someone comes up and takes the position and does that stuff. You know, this time the guy's Gotama. You know what I'm saying? You know, so generally it'd be that. You know, there's a good chance it won't be Howard the Duck or, you know, something like that. It'll always be Gotama or Siddhartha. You know, that'll just be his name. Okay, sorry. So... just one of those references. So, and so then you see and you think, oh, it's just happening now. But Buddhism has been there, it's always been there. It's just that in Kali Yuga, when people get distracted, then the modes of nature adjust, then people are inclined, then it becomes popular. And then as the modes change, they get into something else. You know, does that make sense? You know, was Michael Jackson and Justin Bieber. I'm not sure who they're into now. It just keeps changing. Does that make sense? So that's just how it goes. Yes.
Rama and when Lord Ramchandra is supposed to go to forest, one of the sages, he speaks the materialistic philosophy, the sage Jabali.
Okay.
Then Lord Ramchandra becomes angry at him. With any condition, you should not go to the Vedic principle and preach this.
Okay.
So it's
It's always been there. Yeah. You know, whatever is there now has always been there, just it's more minor in the other ages. Like in the Satyuga, it doesn't mean there's not tribals, it's just that means they're not the prominent teacher. You know, saying that there's not atheists, it's just that. And then it gets more and more. So in Kali Yuga, then it looks prominent. It's just because there are such individuals, so they all come together in Kali Yuga and do their thing. Right? So.
Demon association.
Huh?
Demon association.
Yes, you get the. You want to be materialistic, you get the good, all the Paramahamsas and all that of materialism are born here. The Rag Bhaktas of materialism, yes. 5, interpreting, because in other ages are more formal about their materialism. Well, this one is spontaneous, more advanced materialism. Yeah. 5, interpreting the holy name. The Smritis or Puranas glorify the holy name of Krishna, stating that if one should chant the name either in negligence or in faith, Krishna will show that person great mercy. Right, just the name itself, even you're chanting, doesn't matter the position. If you're chanting, you've heard from a bona fide soul, you will get benefit. Mere is no knowledge as pure as the name. What is this, mere? There's no vow as powerful as the name. Is that supposed to be here or there? Should this be there? There is no knowledge as pure as the name. That makes sense. Because mere, you have to be saying it about something is, something like that. Something that. So there is no knowledge as pure as the name. There's no vow as powerful as the name. Oh, yeah, no, this is this verse. So it has to be. It can't be mere. Right? Because everything's starting with there. There is no meditation more effective than the name, nor is there any fruit greater than that attained by the name. There's no greater renunciation than the name. There's no greater peace than the name. Right? It means giving up everything and just chanting. There's no greater renunciation. In this world, there's no greater pious activity than taking the name, nor is there any quicker process than in the name. The name is the highest liberation, the highest freedom, the highest destination, the highest peace, the highest point of no more searching. The name is the highest devotion. The name is the purest incarnation of the jiva. The name is the highest love and direct remembrance of the Lord. The name is the cause of all causes, the supreme Lord, the most worshipable, and is a form of guru to bring one to Krishna. Right? So it addresses anything, to any value that someone could have. The name is the essence of that. Right? So people are knowledge, no more knowledge, that power, it's nothing, no vows, you know, that they're strict and all that, nothing more than the name. No greater meditation, people like to do that. No greater fruit, right? People like to get results than that attained by the name. No greater renunciation, right? No greater peace, right? People are looking for that. There's no greater pious activity. They want to do what's right, what's good, what's proper, you know, and get the benefits. Nor is there any quicker process. People want the shortcut, you know, the loophole, so this is it. Right? The name is the highest liberation. What liberation? This is higher. The highest freedom, you know, people want freedom like that. The highest destination, the highest peace, the point of no more searching. Right? Highest devotion, purest inclination, you know, but I just want to, you know, be true to myself, my own nature, the real me. This is it. Right? The name is the highest love, right? You know, even higher than those butterflies and the rainbow and all that kind of jazz. And direct remembrance of the Lord. By hearing the name, you're directly remembering the Lord. The name is the cause of all causes, the supreme Lord, the most worshipable, and is a form of guru to bring one to the Lord. Right? So that's the whole point. The name is guru. He'll bring you. You chant nice, he'll bring you. He'll see it go. So that's what he's saying. The whole process will work. He'll take care. That's how it works. Otherwise, why is it when, you know, from previously, if someone's the guru, somehow or another something happens and they're not functioning anymore, why is it the disciple doesn't just like shrivel up or something and turn a little pile of ash and just completely turn to a gross materialist? No, they stay in the exact same position they were. And all they have to do is continue the process. Because the name is the guru. Right? And then, he'll, by his grace, he'll put you in contact with those who can then, therefore, instruct you and take you forward.
Mahabharat, the Pandava, they had many gurus. One of them, Dronacharya, he fell down. And their life didn't collapse. And they were had things to do in their life. And they moved on with their life.
Yes, yes. It's, the point is there in Krishna Bhajanamrita. I think Narahari Chakrabarti. Then he makes the point that gurus falling down, that was happening even at the time of Lord Chaitanya. When he's there, still people were falling away. But the point is that's not what we emphasize on. We emphasize on what is the process, how they get inspired, who did fall, who did, how they got, what results they got. You know, the people fall away, that's happening all the time. That's standard. You know, it's the material world. It means the point is you can go back to Godhead in one lifetime, or if you like, you can take more. You know, so those who give up Krishna consciousness, you know, go back to their previous life. It'll take them longer. But those who stick, they can do it in one life. So as Prabhupada said, you should not be surprised who leaves. Be surprised who stays. Right? In other words, the material world people are conditioned, they prefer to leave. Right? Look for any excuse. Right? But then, those who stay, then they stick in there and they go. It's successful. That's the glory. That's the glory. It is stated that 1,000 names of Vishnu are equivalent to one name of Rama. And 3 names of Rama are equivalent to 1 name of Krishna. The Vedas say that the holy name is purely spiritual, and thus they constantly glorify the name. One who minimizes the effects of chanting the holy name, as stated in the Vedas and Puranas, is an extreme offender. The rascal who commits artavad against the name is doomed to rot away in hell. Some people say that the results of the holy name that are stated in the scriptures are not true, but only meant to attract one to the name, right? Because that's what it does in the Karmakanda. You know, Amara, you'll go to the heavenly planets, it's deathless. That's not true. It just means you'll live a long time. You know, it's just like you say, what do you got? BFF, we're best friends forever. What do you mean? No, I mean, for how many years, you know, 50, 60, 100, then you're dead, right? Then, so, you know, how you say? Unless you're, how you say? What was his name? Quasimodo, then maybe they stay together a little longer time. Right? No? Yeah. Just in, you know, recent events, and we have to remember the histories. Yeah. So it's not like that. It actually, what it says, that is, because the material world is so small time, the spiritual world is so great, that if you compare the two, it just doesn't compare. But we're so used to the material world and think it's so special and so big, that then we'll say, oh, it's like that. When it's not. It appears to be an exaggeration. It's not, because it's just the spiritual world is so much better. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if you only know the reflection of the tree in the water, and then someone's talking about the real tree and how it does this and that and so many things like that, and the other guy's going, you know, this is, what is this? This is exaggeration.
You know, like that. Do the inhabitants of the spiritual world have a look to the material world?
Are?
Can see the material world?
Means they can come down here and see, but who wants to look over here? It's just like you know, you're at the big party, who's going to go look in the garbage can? Right?
Yes, just for fun.
But why would it be fun? You're there in your tuxedo, why would you go rummage through the trash for fun? Ooh, look, three orange peels. Like that, they like oranges. Okay, you know, vitamin C, very good.
Even the demigods don't wish.
Yeah, even the in Kali Yuga, even the demigods won't come here. Prabhu says to pass urine.
Yes.
You know, let alone just come to check what that means. It's just like, who cares? Like that. Yeah. I mean, we think it's great, but they don't. But we see from Gopa Kumar that when he went out into Mahakalapura, that he saw unlimited living entities coming down from the Vaikunthas, you know, all talking and laughing and joking together and going into the material world to preach. So they come down to preach, but there's nothing interesting here. You know, whatever is interesting is Krishna. Now, Krishna has done all these things. So they'll come down and preach that. But as far as it being interesting, why would a perverted reflection be interesting? You know? Yeah, I guess so.
There are a class of people who found the material world, in the spiritual world, but found the material world interesting. I want to see that's us.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. True, good point. So yes, there are persons from the spiritual world who want to check out the material world and see what's that. And then here we are. Yes. So yes, you did bring up a valid point. But that's the whole problem. Then we're here. Yeah. They say check out the trash and then we fall inside, right? But those persons, due to lack of bhakti sukriti, lacking faith, cannot understand the real purport of the scriptures or the greatest welfare of mankind. Instead, they will take the opposite interpretation. Because the Karmakanda section of the Vedas is meant to satisfy one's selfish desire for material gain, for motivation's sake, many tempting results are offered. Right? Because if someone stays in ignorance and does nothing, they're not going to get out of the material world. So you have to have that, you have to have some interest to do something. You have the inspiration that through knowledge, applied knowledge, I'll get results that can create happiness. So now all you have to do is adjust that to, I have knowledge about Krishna and devotional service, I practice devotional service, and that gives the results of pleasing Krishna. And we become happy. Right? You know, one comes to prema. So the principle that one is active is the same. So here, it's to keep them out of ignorance, then they motivate them by giving tempting results. Right? You'll get this, you'll get that. You know, so many things. However, in the process of pure bhakti, the candidate practices unselfishness. Right? So, for those who are selfish, then you give motivation. For those who are unselfish, then, you know, what's the point of giving that? For the goal of bhakti is unmotivated service to Krishna. Therefore, although the statements concerning the holy name are not exaggeration meant to motivate, but are the true effects of the name, the devotee does not take the name for his own material enjoyment. He does not ask for the fruits mentioned in the scriptures. Okay, so even though all these things are there, one's liberated, one's this, that, they don't ask for that. They're just interested in the devotional service. But all this showing is that it's beyond the mundane. Yeah? Just by namabhas, one can get all the results attained by the process of karma and jnana. That's just namabhas. That's the point. Namabhas will get you up to liberation. It won't give you prema. Only Shuddhanam will give you prema. You know, so they take it, well, how can just, you know, one name do that and this and that? Because liberation is such a great thing. No, it's not. So namabhas gives that. Prema, now that's the special thing. That's the great thing. Okay. Okay. Just by namabhas, one can get all the results obtained by the process of karma and jnana. If such results can be obtained by namabhas, is there need to doubt the great effect, great benefit one would get by chanting the pure name? But if anything material can be gained by namabhas, then why would you doubt the position of pure name? All the glories of the name that are recited in the scriptures are accepted as fact by the sincere bhakta. The low-class men do not accept this. However, and by their doubting commit offense, which leads them to certain ruin. From the beginning to the end of the Vedas. So these aren't these points where they're pointing out that the fault there, it's not the condemnation of that, they're just pointing out that's what it is. They'll be ruined. Because the only benefit is for the soul to become devoted to Krishna and attain to prema. So if they're doing activities that will take them away from that, then that's most unfortunate. So that's certain ruin. From the beginning to the end of the Vedas, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, and the Puranas, the name is glorified. To minimize and interpret these glories, which are clearly stated by the authority of the Vedas, will yield no good result. Okay, so you minimize the glories of the name, or you interpret them. Okay. The Lord and the Lord's name are one, for the Lord has invested in the name all his transcendental energies. Thus he has made chanting of the holy name the supreme process. As the Lord is completely independent and full of all energies, he has by his will invested in karmakanda activities, his material energy, and in brahma-gyan, his nirvana energy. But in the holy name, he has invested all energies with all results. Why argue about why and how? The Lord can do what he wants. Therefore, the intelligent, learned man will not yield to interpreting the glorious name. Right? So the karmakanda section, that is empowered with his material energy. And then it'll function only within that sphere. Right? And the brahma-gyan, then the nirvana, or that impersonal energy, is given. And then that's what you can get. But in the holy name, then all energies are there. So whatever benefit you want from any position can be gained. But it's all in connection with Krishna. So these are just positions and facilities for doing service. They're not taken as goals. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, attaining to facilitating the material energy is a goal in karmakanda. Or Brahman is, liberation is the goal. But in devotional service, they're just facilities. That's why it says that the Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha are standing at the door with folded hands to render service. They render service. They're not a goal. So does that make sense? A goal, we serve them. Here, it's they serve the devotee. Right? If one happens to commit artavad, he should humbly go before an assembly of Vaishnavas who engage in discussions about Krishna and reveal his offense at their feet, begging sincerely for forgiveness. The devotees of the Lord, conversant with the glories of the holy name, will mercifully forgive him and embrace him. The offense of interpreting or concocting will not occur again. If one happens to talk with one of these offenders, one should immediately, without taking off one's clothes, bathe in the Ganges for purification. If any pure water is not available, one should mentally purify oneself. Yeah, so you take shelter of the devotees and then by their mercy, then one will avoid that. Six, committing sin on the strength of the name. The jiva takes shelter of the pure name, which is Shuddha Sattva, transcendental, and pure at all times. Quickly all the anartas, including weakness of heart, will go away. Right? Because weakness of heart means is that you have attachment to the senses in a particular application. Right? Gridhaidarbalya means that just the general principle of sense enjoyment. Right? Satrishna is the specific, and the Hridayadrabalya is the generic. So, by taking shelter of the holy name in all the nartas, including weakness of heart, because that's the basis of it, you want to enjoy the material energy. Right? So then, that will go away. So then, it takes care of everything. When one becomes fixed in the holy name, one will no longer think of committing sin, and the effects of past sin will no longer influence one. Because the past sin influences because you think back and, oh, how I could, you know, get something from that. Right? Because it has that aspect of the desire seed and that aspect, we said, of kutaj, where there's that potential of engaging again in that activity. Right? This is due to purification of the heart, right, from the pure chanting. Sin may be analyzed in three stages. A sinful act is the final stage. This is caused by a seed of sin, or a desire to sin. That desire, a seed, originates in ignorance, which is the root cause. All three are considered as causes of the suffering of the jiva. Right? So the sinful activity, then there's the seed, and that then is ignorance. So if you get rid of ignorance, then you get rid of the seeds, then you get rid of sin. So that makes sense. Because that Vidyadharbalya, that's actually a principle of that ignorance, that weakness. It's a generic thing. Then you have the specific seeds. You know, that's the Satrishna. It is guaranteed that quickly one will be purified. We'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Prema.